Hello and welcome to the Work Like a Laker podcast. I'm Megan Rickson, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Brian Bosick. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Megan.
So today we are going to be talking about research. So how students can gain research experience, why it might be important, what sort of opportunities that GVSU has to offer, all that sort of good stuff. So you want to kick us off with kind of one of the first ways?
You bet. So research, one of the first things I think about when I hear from students is that you can take a research course. And that might be like a research methods class, or sometimes research is in a capstone course. But that is usually like the first time a student's going to get introduced to research, the idea of research.
Yeah, and some of the methods behind that, right? To kind of give you some background.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good deal. Yeah, then the next would be, you could do research within your internship or work experience. So maybe you find an internship that specifically is focused on research, or maybe you get a internship within, let's say, marketing, and you realize, ooh, I really like the consumer behavior aspect of this. I want to do research on that. And you find a way to work with your supervisor to do that. So yeah, I think that definitely is an outside of the classroom opportunity.
Yeah, and there's, I think, one other that comes to mind, too. If it isn't in a class or it's not an internship, sometimes you can do extracurricular research. And I think the big question that often comes with that is, how do I do that?
Yeah.
Here at Grand Valley, we have the Office of Undergraduate Research and Scholarship, and they do an amazing job of getting you connected. So we will be talking much more about that in the podcast today, but that they're a wonderful resource. They will walk with you step by step in the process and really help you get connected if you want to start that journey into research.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we definitely will be going more in depth on that. And you might be wondering, why should I be doing research?
Great question.
Is this going to be beneficial to me in the long term or short term? Because, you know, it can be a big commitment. I do think that might be a myth we'll be able to debunk a little bit in terms of commitment level. But studies have shown that students who participate in undergraduate research have higher graduation rates, have increased levels of learning, increased professional benefits, and enhanced personal development. So that's according to the Tennessee Board of Regents Office of Policy and Strategy. So I think there's some good stuff that can come from it.
Absolutely. And not to mention, like, as you graduate, those skills that you bring, your employers will love. And we'll talk more about that soon, too.
Okay. So to tell us more about research opportunities on campus, we have Dr. Susan Mendoza joining us. She is the director for the Center of Undergraduate Scholar Engagement here at GVSU. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. And we're excited because we think you're a bit of an expert on this topic, right?
A little bit. I've had a couple years doing the work, just a couple.
Yeah,
so a little last century, but I can do my best.
So good. So I'm just going to let you kind of jump in with just a introduction of who you are, what you do, maybe what your center does. Give us a little background.
So in our office, we love acronyms. So the Center for Undergraduate Scholar Engagement, we call it CUES. And CUES, our work essentially supports students that are interested in academic and creative work and experiences and projects outside the classroom.
Okay.
So there are offices on campuses that provide support for their curricular work, things that students do in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
We're really interested on students' creativity, their interests, their curiosity outside the classroom. And we do that with two different offices. The first office is the Frederick Meyer Office of Fellowships. So the Fellowships Office supports students who are interested in doing things outside of Grand Valley and provides some support for applications for that process. So folks want to know more about that, they can do the gvsu.edu/fellowships.
Awesome. We will throw that in the show notes.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Yes.
I'm sure I'll have some show note tips that I'll pass along.
Perfect.
As well.
That would be great.
The other office is the Office of Undergraduate Research and Scholarship. So that office in particular provides support for students who are interested in doing research, scholarship, creative work that, again, is outside the classroom, but is supported by our faculty. So students who might want to explore a particular question or explore an idea with their art or their music or their dance, they work with a faculty member to explore that in a variety of different ways. So that's what OURS does. That's the other acronym.
Very good. Well, that's helpful.
That sounds amazing.
It does. I like how you describe research in terms of art and creativity and all this broad definition. That's very cool to hear.
See, one thing that students struggle with, faculty colleagues struggle with, parents struggle with, is understanding what research is.
Yeah.
And I know when I started this role, I always thought of research as my colleagues that have the coats on, the white coats, and might work in the wet labs, pipetting,
yes.
or my experience when I was in college, which was a minute ago, and being in the archives or being in the stacks
yes.
in the library with
yeah.
physical
those
books,
would definitely be the two images
right?
that would and come
microfiche.
To my mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and one of the reasons why we tend to use research, scholarship, and creative work is because there are different ways in which students from different majors and disciplines explore questions. And we want to make sure that students recognize that any way in which they explore a question mm-hmm. is engaging in research. Mm. Research really is being curious about something mm-hmm. and exploring it
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. in a variety of different ways. So mm-hmm. I just like to clarify that from the beginning. That's
Love
helpful
that.
For folks.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
I like that. I was curious, if somebody comes to you with that curiosity, mm-hmm. how might you help them?
So I have a colleague who always asks the question, what problem do you want to solve?
Okay.
Right. So she tends to, this is Dr. Linda Chamberlain. She's a chemist by training. But her focus is at the university is helping folks with patents and bringing things to market. Right.
Oh,
so she's always asking the question, what problem do you want to solve?
Mm. Yeah.
And oftentimes that has folks pause. And they're like, you know, I want to better understand global warming. I want to better understand health inequity. I want to better understand the weather, going with the
yeah.
last example.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's one way in which we try to help folks is clarify what's interesting to them.
Mm. Okay.
I will ask folks where the time sucks are. So where's the rabbit hole? It's okay. late at night. You're on Instagram and you're going down rabbit holes. What piques your curiosity? Like what makes your head happy? Not your procrastination self.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But where do you find yourself wanting to learn more?
Uh-huh.
And what does that look like? Or I might ask a student, tell me about your favorite class or your favorite lecture.
Great.
What was that caught you? One of the things about students, and I think especially with the pandemic, and I find this for myself, mm-hmm. I don't always feel like I have permission to ask good questions because I'm always trying to give the answer that someone is looking for.
Sure.
Not the authentic question. And so helping folks ask authentic questions is really powerful. So that tends to be where we start.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. And once they've started to formulate that, is that part of your role helping to connect them to maybe who the next person is to help them investigate that or figure out how to do that?
Yeah, that's the point of college, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, it really is. Yes.
So that's the point of college, is that we want folks to have questions and figure out how to explore them in a way that helps them move towards an answer.
Okay.
So that might be working with a particular faculty member. It might be thinking about a particular approach. It might be working with one of my library colleagues to better understand the question itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we do kind of put in there the next steps. And so for some students, it's trying to figure out who to connect with. For some students, it's realizing that connecting is an option.
Okay.
That they can reach out to faculty, they can reach out to folks and ask the question.
When we say the term research, I know at least for me, probably for you too, Brian,
mm-hmm.
a lot of kind of myths come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Can you debunk, and I'm sure you get many of these kind of in your office all the time, but can you debunk what some of the common myths might be around research? I mean, it kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, like we imagine that person in the lab coat
yeah.
with the pipette. Can you just kind of share your thoughts on that?
The assumptions,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the assumptions. So probably, let me think for a moment. One of the biggest ones I run into is students, we all make assumptions about what a good student is, and folks can't see it, but I'm using air quotes. good student,
yep.
good grades, right? And this assumption that having good grades means that you're a good learner,
mm-hmm.
which isn't always true.
Right.
So one of the myths or the assumptions I hear students make is, well, don't I have to be a 4-point student? Or don't I have to be very active and participating in class? Or don't I have to have taken that class? Or.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that's interesting is that the students who do best in undergraduate research are students who are not afraid of failure.
Mm.
I like that.
Because research when you don't know what the answer is going to be and you're trying a different approach, you're going to screw it up.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's powerful learning from that. So failure and that comfort with failure is really, really critical. We actually have a program we do in February around Valentine's Day called Falling in Love with Failure. where we
fantastic. Great name.
We think it's awesome.
That is awesome.
So we pull together faculty and it's a panel of faculty talking about their failures in their work and how important failure is in learning. And it's a lovely experience, and you learn so much about your faculty colleagues. And I always encourage folks to attend. But that comfort and failure is one characteristic folks need. The other piece is sheer will and grit and persistence, right? So if you're not going to get it right, learning from what you did wrong, trying and trying again, getting that feedback. And if learning is the center, then that student will be a good researcher, scholar, performer, right? Artist.
Yes.
Right.
So it's very powerful. So I think that's the first myth that I think of. The second myth is it's not applicable to all majors. It's only students, right, who work in the field, again, air quotes, in the sciences. So maybe outside, it's in the lab, right? Mathematicians do research. Mm-hmm. Physicists do research. The amount of research that goes into artwork is phenomenal.
It's a great
point. Wow, I would not have thought that. Yeah.
So it's more than the quote unquote smart folks. It's more than particular majors and disciplines. It also can be punctuated. So you don't have to do all of the research process from hypothesis or idea generation to sharing it. Mm-hmm. You can just do a part.
That's a great point. I think so many folks, they get caught, right? They get caught in this is so big. Where do I, and if I commit, I've committed.
Like I'm writing this master's level thesis or something. This is what's happening. Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be that, right? Okay. We have this desire to complete things, but research is oftentimes not completed.
Yeah. Right.
It's this endless process. But you can start with just asking a really good question. You can start with a literature review. You can maybe contribute to data collection, do some sketches, do some composition. So it's engaging in the question. That is research. It's not doing the thing at the end, which might be a presentation or an exhibit or a performance. It's kind of anything in between. So I always ask, you know, what's limiting you? What's giving you some hesitations? And that oftentimes is a myth. Well, isn't it just the smart kids? No, not really.
Right.
I'm just letting you know the B kids who have to hustle are amazing researchers, right?
Absolutely.
So it's really helping someone to think about what questions they have. Is not the faculty members' questions. It's the questions the students have that tend to be the most powerful and the most interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah.
If a student does take this leap and they say, hey, I'm going to do this, what are some of the benefits they can get from doing research?
I mentioned a couple earlier, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of this, it's training your mind to engage in inquiry. So, a lot of students I work with sometimes will be thinking about graduate school or professional school. Mm-hmm. They know that research is something they're supposed to pursue, but they don't always know why.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll talk about how engaging in research is a way of training your mind to inquire, look for faults, fallacies, figure out how to ask a question and pursue the answer, and what's the method and approach. So there's that piece of it. As I mentioned earlier, all of our students work with faculty. So they are apprenticing, learning how to do research under the support or mentorship or guidance or coaching of a faculty member. And that relationship's really important because it doesn't matter what you're going to do. You're going to need a reference.
That's a good point, right?
Whether it's graduate school, a job, whatever it may be, you're going to want a reference. And you're going to want someone who knows you well.
Yes.
And so this
I would imagine those people get to know your faculty member in that sort of a setting. It's probably a lot easier than in the classroom setting where they have 30 other students or 20.
Exactly. It's that one-on-one relationship. Yeah. They get to know you, what you're good at, what you're struggling with, how you ask questions, how you learn, how you handle failure. They're very, very rich references. And it's not just the reference, it's the support after you graduate. Most faculty will know what their students are doing 10, 15, 20 years down the road, which is lovely.
It's incredible. Mm.
It is. And it makes Grand Valley a little bit smaller in a good way, right? So you have that support and guidance. Mm-hmm. So there's the faculty mentorship piece of it, guidance. There is the training the mind piece of it. Mm-hmm. But there's also the practical piece of it. So you can earn credit doing undergraduate research. Okay. So that's independent research, independent study.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a $399 or $499. Oftentimes there'll be paid opportunities to get involved in research, either as undergraduate research assistants. You might be able to, I mentioned earlier, collecting data or doing literary review, whatever it may be. That can be a paid job. That's not unusual on campus. It's pretty common.
Really is.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there are lots of different benefits from the cash piece of it, right?
Okay. Getting, yes. Yep.
Getting paid to do cool things. Learning how to kind of approach these questions and getting the support, the guidance from faculty. And the one I always like to add at the end, because my research students that I've worked with in the past remind me all the time, it's fun. So they remind me that this is fun. We enjoy it. We love working together. Oftentimes there are communities of students that are doing the research. And they just are a peer group, and they're a group that support one another over time. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other piece of it, is the social component.
That's great.
Which is oftentimes the piece I don't think about, but our students always think about.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So you've touched a little bit on what your center does.
Yeah.
Can you just break that down a little bit? Like, tell us a little bit more about the fellowships side of things, the funding, professional development, even like support for graduate school. Can you just kind of break down a few of those?
Yeah, we try not to do all the things, but we end up doing all the things, right?
We do.
So, let me start with the first piece is, I'm going to say advising. So in our office, we have professional advisors. I serve in that role. So advise students who are interested in doing research. I also provided advising and guidance to faculty. That's one of my areas of specialty.
Oh,
okay.
Because faculty want to figure out how best to support students and what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So we do provide support for them as well. We have faculty fellows. So we have faculty that are in our office, as part of their job, if you will. And they provide support to students. So if a student is really interested in a particular area, then I might connect them with one of our faculty fellows. So Anna Hammersmith from sociology is one of our faculty fellows. Her specialty is elder care.
Okay.
And really thinking about healthcare systems for the elderly and the aging. And she does fantastic work. We have Jody Hunt in our office, who does a lot of work with John Ball Zoo in studying animals.
Yeah.
So it's bringing in researchers to provide that support to students. We also have graduate students and undergraduate students, and our undergraduate research ambassadors are students who have done research that are trained to support other students. So they can provide that guidance and information, kind of get, if students want to get a sense of what is this really like, I don't want to talk to
a faculty member to tell
me. And I don't want to talk to Dr. Mendoza either. They can totally talk with one of our undergraduate research ambassadors, and so that's another option. So our office provides advising and guidance, I guess, is the first piece.
Yep.
The second piece is we provide programs and grants. So programs and grants would be opportunities that we have through our office where students can get involved in research, from the more basic, so being a research assistant, having a job where you might perform a task. We were kind of joking about pipetting earlier. Something like that, transcribing interviews.
Okay.
They can do that piece. Or they might have their own research question. They want to devote a full-time summer to that, let's say. And they will explore that research question for 12 weeks with a faculty member. That's another one of the programs that we have. So we try to make sure that students have the opportunity to engage in research without having many barriers, and financial is part of that. So both of those programs provide support for students.
Fantastic.
So similar to a job. We also provide project supplies. So if someone wants to explore a particular piece of music and they need to get the rights to a few scores, we provide support for that. We support 100 students plus a year traveling to conferences and competitions.
Wow.
So they don't have to take on any of that financial burden, yeah. but they can yeah. go away and be smart, share all their
yeah.
the cool things that they've done.
So and again, the networking component that I'm sure
absolutely,
is
that's really, really true.
Yeah. And we provide support for that too. So yeah. You had mentioned kind of professional development.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure students have the support in figuring out how to network. So I'm naturally a very strong introvert. So networking in large groups is very uncomfortable mm-hmm. for me. It doesn't come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And so in our office, we have a program called Anchoring Research. And it's a series of kind of shorter seminars or programs that are either recorded or in person or via Zoom. And we talk about some of the skills that students might want or need. And that includes, how do you network at a conference?
That's
how
great.
Do you network in general? What is research? Yes. What are some library skills that might be helpful? So we try to do some of that additional training for them. And the last piece that I think of with our office is some of these larger celebration events.
Okay.
An example would be in the fall, we have undergraduate research fair. So mm-hmm. undergraduate research fair is always the first Tuesday in October.
Okay.
And it's in the Grand River Room in the Kirchhoff Center. And we have faculty from all over campus who are there just to nerd out. And to share to share what they do. Aww. They
yes.
love talking about their work and how they can involve students and how students can be engaged. And a student might come to a table and have a really cool idea. This happened a few years ago. We had a student who was a physics student, mm-hmm. but also was a performance major for the oboe. And so she was fascinated oh, wow. by oboe reeds and how they were carved. Ooh. Is that connected to physics? And so you had one faculty member walking her to the other table. And that's how her project started.
Wow.
And she did a summer project on the oboe reed, did additional work on acoustics, then went off to grad school to study musicology. But it's really cool opportunities just to
wow.
see what's available.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
you know, the introverts like me can kind of hang back and mm-hmm. observe.
Mm-hmm.
And then my team will be there as well, so we can answer any questions. So that's in the fall. In the spring, mm-hmm. or in the winter,
yeah.
as we say at Grand Valley, right?
Uh-huh.
In the winter.
Yeah.
The second Wednesday in April, so it's generally the second week in April, we have Student Scholars Day, and there are a lot of different events associated with that. So we'll have generally 400 to 500 students presenting their work.
That's so
wow.
cool.
And exhibits and national speakers, and it's really kind of cool. So mm-hmm. we try to celebrate
yeah.
what scholarship and research and creative work is and demonstrate that across campus and mm-hmm. showcase what students are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the last little plug I'll make is for students who do get involved in undergraduate research, they do get involved in creative work. We're one of the few universities, and I think the only one in Michigan that provides a transcript designation. So they can actually have it say on their transcript, undergraduate research scholar, undergraduate
oh, wow.
creative scholar.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's a university endorsement of their work.
Wow.
And so they get the happy little certificate, right? I like those things. They get a little certificate,
uh-huh.
but they also receive cords because it's an honorary. So that's
wow.
another thing that we do to try to recognize their work in a very public way.
Very cool. And
yeah.
then what a great little resume builder. You can just
it is. It's quite lovely.
Right.
And then you get the regalia mm-hmm. bling, right?
Exactly.
yes.
You get all the fun
look
stuff.
All fancy.
I know,
graduate.
Right?
Yeah.
It's important to be fancy.
So good. Oh. That's awesome. All right. So this was super informative. I learned a lot.
Awesome.
Thank
I
you.
I did too. And
so much.
Yes. I thought it was a topic. I'm like, I think I know it, but
yeah.
my mind is somewhat
yeah, I think
blown
my mind
right
is
now.
A little blown.
yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Mendoza.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Awesome. So we definitely will include information on your office, on your center in the show notes. But just as kind of your final plug for your center, do you want them to make an advising appointment? What's kind of that very, very first entry point if they're curious
yeah.
about research?
I'm going to say do something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So everyone's something is different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So make an appointment,
yep.
hop on our website,
yep.
Which is, of course, gvsu.edu/hours, which will be in the show notes.
Yep.
But make an appointment. You can even, if you have a faculty member
yeah.
and one of your classes, you just think they're really cool,
uh-huh.
go to their office hours
yep.
and say, tell me about your research.
Right.
And they will talk your ear off. So be sure to block some time for that.
Good
but
point.
Start asking
yep.
those questions.
Yep.
We will always be there. So you can come see us in the first semester of your first year at Grand Valley. You can come see us as a sophomore or junior, seniors, you move quickly. but it's just do something mm-hmm. and to take yeah. that first step.
Yep.
The other thing I oftentimes hear from students is, I'm just not sure. How do I talk to a faculty member? How do I ask that question? In our office, we've all been there. We're an office of introverts that aren't always sure. And this is important to work to us. So reach out via email. Stop mm-hmm. by the library. We're on the second floor of the library. If you go to the main staircase, you dead end into our office.
Okay.
And yes. we always have chocolate and treats.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Stop by. So if nothing awesome. Else, you get a little bit of sugar.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't need that?
I know. Of course.
Right. Sugar and, you know, you might open your mind for the rest of your life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Open your mind, then
yeah.
sugar.
Yeah. 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 Perfect.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, I think that concludes our questions. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. It was a delight to speak with both of you. And I hope to see some of your listeners or hear some of your listeners or read their emails when they email yes. the office.
That would be great.
Yeah, thank that'd you. Be great.
And now we're going to hear from Ian Curtis, who is a GVSU student that has participated in research. So Ian, can you start by introducing yourself and tell us what is your major and what made you interested in getting involved with research?
So my name is Ian Curtis. I come from Grandville, Michigan, and I am a French and a statistics major. I started out as a math major and ended up changing that to statistics because I was more interested in the applied setting of math. But in terms of research, I got started in my freshman year. It was really the French program that drove me to do research. I wanted to do research in math, and they recommended that I have a few more semesters of experience, just to get enough of that basic knowledge to start research, which was fair. And so I wanted to get into research somehow, because of the benefits that I had heard about, some of the skills that I could learn. I had heard about presentation skills, about working with a faculty member one-on-one, getting lines on my resume, all those things that I thought would be beneficial in the future, and would help me in the moment too, learning the content necessary to help me through my major and my minor.
That's great. Those seem like excellent reasons to get involved with research.
With GVSU, I became connected with that research, specifically the freshman year in the fall. I went to the undergraduate research fair that the Office of Undergraduate Research puts on, where basically all the departments on campus come into one central location. They share what research means to that department. And they also share any professors who have expressed interest in recruiting undergraduate students to help them with the research. And this is where I went to the math department first, and they said that I should probably be getting a few more of the basic classes, which is totally understandable. So I went over to the French table, and I found my current professor was on the list of professors looking for students to do research with. And he was researching an 18th century French encyclopedia and all the scandals and situations and articles and everything that went with it. And I was intrigued by this. It piqued my interest, and it also helped that he was my current professor. So I was able to take that flyer and think about what I wanted to do with research, and I looked at some of the other professors who were on there as well. But ultimately, I was able to just talk to him in class. I went up to him in class and I said, "Hey, I saw that you're looking for a research assistant. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you're into? Because I'm interested." And we had a meeting, and I sat down, and he told me a little bit about what he was doing, and I found that I also really enjoyed what he was doing. I thought it was quite interesting, looking into historical scandals and trying to figure out who thought what, when, and where. And so we decided to work together from that point on. And I ended up doing some research projects with him Over a couple of summers, I did a library summer scholars program, where also under Amber Dierking, who is a GVSU librarian. And basically the point of that program was to develop a project that benefited the library in some sort, or future researchers. That same summer, I worked with Dr. David Icke, who is the French professor that I was working with, and he was developing a role-playing game to be played in classrooms in French, where each student gets assigned a role in history, and history is reenacted. Whether that stays the same as real history or not is up to the course of the game. But he was developing this game on the French encyclopedia that I had been researching for a little bit now. And he asked for some help refining the game, updating the bibliography, which I was able to do because I had just finished this research project about collecting some sources for all about the encyclopedia. So I was in a prime position to help him out with this. So he invited me on to help make sure the game was up to date. It had good information in it. And then I went through, also did a bunch of grammar correction. I even wrote my own two characters into the game and added a new scandal into the game to add a new anti-Enlightenment side, anti-encyclopedia side. And that was enough that they were willing to put my name on there as a contributor. The next summer, I did an S-Cubed project, a Student Summer Scholars project. And this one was based off of the research that I had done in the prior summer. Some of the characters that I had added to the game were central to a plagiarism accusation scandal against this encyclopedia in 1758-1759. There was one particular character who really focused on the supplemental images to this encyclopedia, and he claimed they were plagiarized. And based off of my research, the literature had not really determined if this guy was correct. Were they actually plagiarized? And if so, why? If not, then why was he accusing? And so I devoted an entire summer to try and answer the question of whether these were plagiarized. And although I didn't quite get the answer I wanted, I feel like it was very beneficial to contribute to the body of research on the encyclopedia.
Wow. That is a lot to pack into a short amount of time. Sounds like really, really cool experience. So we heard that you've done research in some very different areas. Can you kind of explain how you pivoted from one area to the other?
It was at a point where I felt good enough to start talking to my stats and my computer science professors to see what my options were now that I had had a bunch of stats courses and other experience through class projects behind me. And so I reached out with one of my old professors. I took an intro to Python course. I think it was early on in my freshman year. And I reached back out to the professor of that course asking if she would be willing to work with me on a project for my honor senior project. And she said, yeah. Dr. Aaron Carrier and I, we worked on a Spotify recommendation algorithm that was specifically designed to be used in a research lab or for research purposes. So basically, I wanted to figure out if we give people control over how their recommendations are created, will they be more satisfied with those recommendations? Regardless of if the recommendations are actually better or not, will they be perceived as better if the user had some control over how they were created? And so I coded a recommendation algorithm from using Spotify's online services to try and answer that question. And although I wasn't able to test it in an experimental setting, I was able to create the algorithm itself. to be used perhaps in future research purposes. So the transition itself from French to statistics wasn't terribly difficult for me, simply because I was already involved in both of those majors, both of those disciplines, and I just had to ask professors that I had had in the past. So I feel like that was a great connection, is having professors who I either currently had or had had in the past. They were kind of my gateway into the research interest and whatever I was interested in. Even if my professor had said no, she didn't want to work with me, I would have asked her for help in getting connected with another faculty member. I found that once you're in the know with one faculty member, you typically also can easily get involved with a number of others who are their colleagues. Faculty work together more often than not. So the transition was not terribly difficult for me because of those faculty connections.
It is so good to hear that you were able to reach back out to a faculty member from an intro course that you had in your freshman year. That's very cool. So what was your favorite part of your research experience?
For me, the real joy in doing research is sharing that research with the rest of the world. I've done multiple presentations now, where I did a recorded one online, I did an in-person poster presentation, and just this year I did an oral presentation for one of my class projects in a capstone class. And so sharing what I've done with other people is really cool.
So that is very cool, to be able to share your research with the rest of the world. I love that that's your favorite part. So how has research influenced your future career plans?
Although I haven't quite figured out my future research plans and my future plans in general, my research overall has encouraged me to go on to get a master's degree. In terms of career, I'm not quite sure exactly where I want to go or where life is going to take me. My guess is that it's going to be very difficult to avoid involving research in wherever I end up going, because especially with stats, research is just there. Data is the result of research. It's the result of exploration, and data analysis is just turning that research into interpretable results. And of course, my favorite part is sharing the knowledge with everybody else, and that's a part of research as well. So I would love to get into a position that involves something like that, of having data, interpreting the data, and sharing the trends and the results with other people. So wherever I go, I would like to have that as a part of my job. I feel like that would make me very happy and something that I really want to get into.
Thank you so much, Ian. Research really does seem like such a transformative experience. You know, once you maybe have done some research and you're thinking, okay, I've had all of these amazing experiences, I want to be able to share these experiences with others, maybe specifically with, you know, professionals you're networking with or in an interview. That's a really good thing to start thinking about before you're actually applying, right?
Absolutely.
So you can maybe start with thinking about how to incorporate it on your resume, in your cover letter, maybe in your personal statement if graduate school is the next step for you. You definitely will want to include specific details about your research on your resume in any sort of those application materials, because I think it'll be a really great opportunity to write some of those accomplishment statements. So it's not just, you know, I did some research with a faculty member for a semester, but it's what was that question you were exploring as Dr. Mendoza was talking about? What came from that? Which piece of the research were you doing? What were those hands-on components? I really think there's a lot that you can incorporate there.
Absolutely. And I think as you work to incorporate that, there's a couple tips on how to help share your results as well. Sometimes the work you do, you can get it published. And maybe that's in a journal, maybe that's in a presentation you did at a conference. And those are all things you can reference in interviews, in your resume. One of the important things, as Megan was saying, is how do you share this information?
Right.
We suggest you practice condensing the summary of your research to that brief elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. So that when somebody asks you, what did you study? You've got that 30-second to a minute quick condensed version. And
that's
then
compelling,
you can,
right? Like,
yes,
yeah, you want to craft this like compelling way of saying it, because we know you did some cool stuff.
Right.
But you got to be able to say it pretty quickly.
Yes, in a way that then if they want more questions, mm-hmm. they can dive into that.
Yep.
So think about how you summarize that, almost like when somebody asks you something that's important about you, how do you summarize that?
Absolutely.
The other thing to think about as you are applying and as you're kind of putting all of this together, how does the position you're applying for tie into your research skills? So think about how you highlight that in a cover letter, your resume, an interview. There are so many transferable skills. And if you have questions about how to do that, you can talk to one of us, but you can also talk to your research advisor as you let them know, like, hey, I'm applying here. What did we do that you think would be great? And they would be an excellent resource for you.
That's really good advice. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I think we have covered the whole gamut of things here today, so we're going to leave you there. We know we've mentioned the show notes many times, but please go and connect to all of these great resources. And we thank you so much to everyone who listened today, and we hope you tune in to a future episode soon.